Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Arena REIT FY 2018 annual result presentation. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, 21st of August, and I would now like to hand the conference over to your first speaker today, Mr. Gareth Winter. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone, and welcome to Arena REIT's FY 2018 annual results presentation. Arena's annual results announcement, investor presentation, and financial statements were released to the ASX earlier today. My name is Gareth Winter. I am Arena's Chief Financial Officer, and joining me on the call today is Rob de Vos, Arena's Head of Property. Unfortunately, Bryce Mitchelson, Arena's Managing Director, is unable to join us today. Bryce had an unplanned medical procedure last week, nothing life-threatening, but he is unfortunately out of action for the next week or so. I know he is looking forward to catching up with many of you in the coming weeks. On the call today, Rob and I will run through the investor presentation, and as the operator mentioned, there will be an opportunity for questions at the conclusion of our presentation. I will provide some initial comments on highlights and then run through a summary of Arena's financial results and capital management update, and Rob will then give an update on Arena's portfolio, as well as some market commentary and outlook. Given the start time of this call, we are conscious that many of you may have results lunches to get to today, so we will try and get through this in time for people to get to other events. Firstly, turning to page three of our presentation, you will see from the highlights that Arena has been successful in growing income and distributions for investors in FY 2018. In particular, our cash-based net operating profit of 34.7 million represents a 21% increase on the prior year, with the revenue growth from ongoing development activity and rent reviews substantially flowing through to the bottom line due to a comparably stable expense structure. EPS is up 6.5%, and we have paid a full-year distribution of 0.128 per security, which was in line with guidance and represented a 6.7% increase on the prior year. Underlying rental growth and a firming in market yields delivered 32 million dollars of asset revaluations, which was the primary contributor to the 7% increase in NAV per security. Our gearing has reduced to just under 25% at 30 June, with 69 million dollars of equity raised in FY 2018, which we used to fund our development pipeline. The current gearing, in conjunction with other capital management initiatives during FY 2018, has further improved the resilience of our capital structure and built additional capacity to fund new growth opportunities. The property team completed 14 ELC developments this year in conjunction with our tenant partners, which has contributed to both income growth and sustaining our WALE at near 13 years, which we'll observe from the chart has significantly increased over the past five years due to active management and engagement with our tenants. As a bit of a milestone, in June of this year, Arena clocked up five years since its ASX listing, and we can now report a five-year total return of 23.6% per annum, which is a stat supplied by the REIT team at UBS. For those that might follow the UBS monthly REIT report, they initially missed our five-year anniversary from their June monthly reporting chart, but they were kind enough to provide the data for our presentation. Whilst the overall one-year return was relatively flat, and we'd always prefer it to be higher, the Arena team remains focused on delivering long-term investor value, and it is pleasing that investors who have supported Arena since listing have received solid returns. How are we driving performance? If you turn to page four, you will see a summary of Arena's strategic investment model. We all acknowledge the importance of strategy driving day-to-day activity, and it is the strong connection between strategy and management's approach that has delivered the financial and operating outcomes such as those I've highlighted. Maintaining a predictable income stream for investors has come through active portfolio management, building on our long-term relationships with tenant partners, and making selective new investments, which are in turn supported by efficient management and resilient capital structure. Whilst the early learning sector has more recently experienced the new supply, which we have been expecting and have been talking about with our investors for several years now, demand growth, long-term demographic, and other social factors continue to support Arena's vision as a diversified social infrastructure property investor. With solid financial fundamentals, Arena remains well placed to work with our tenant partners on new opportunities that will deliver sustainable operations which service long-term community and needs and deliver returns for our investors. If you turn to page 5, you will see that we are providing distribution guidance for FY19 of 13.5 cents per security. This represents a 5.5% increase on FY18. The chart accompanying that demonstrates that we have been able to consistently lift earnings and distributions in each year following our ASX listing. Rob will have some further comments on outlook later in the presentation. Moving on to the financial results, quickly, if we turn to page 7, you will find a summary of Arena's operating income statement. For us, net operating profit represents Arena's cash-based earnings and is the source of distributions to investors. It excludes non-cash accounting adjustments, the most substantial of which is the periodic revaluation of investment property. There is a reconciliation of net operating profit to statutory profit in the appendix to the presentation. EPS of 13.1 cents per security tracked in line with expectations at the time of our capital raising in early FY18, and this provided substantial funding for the development pipeline. A key driver of the result was the 15% increase in property revenue. This has come from the annual rent reviews, which are generally the greater of CPI or 2.5% per annum, and the full year effect of prior period market rent reviews, which averaged at a low of 6%. There are actually very few market rent reviews in FY18, hence our like-for-like rental growth in FY18 of 2.6%, closely aligned with the predominant lease minimum. Rob will talk more about the forward-looking rent review profile shortly. We have also benefited from new income from Arena's continued investment in ALC developments, which made a substantial contribution to revenue growth, noting that 8 developments were completed in FY17, and 14 developments were completed in FY18 at a yield of 6.7% on cost. Just moving on from there, other income includes interest and fees earned from managing healthcare property syndicates, with the income increase largely due to interest on cash from the new equity raised prior to those funds being used to reduce debt or fund capital expenditure. Our property expenses reduced compared to last year. This was principally due to costs returning to a more normal level after a higher expense in the prior year. Some of you may recall that we did 120 early lease extensions in FY17. And so there were additional costs associated with that. Cash operating expenses were stable across the year. Expectation is that these costs will slightly increase in FY19 from growth in the business and underlying operations. Our finance costs also remained relatively stable over the period, with a slight increase due to a combination of factors. We had an average debt balance that was around $12 million higher than the prior year. There was a small increase in relative cost of debt that was driven in part by the recent phenomenon of the BBSW pricing margins and the reweighting of our debt facilities to longer dated maturities, and also an extension in our average hedge term, offsetting that with some higher capitalised interest on our development WIP, which obviously ran a lot higher this year compared to the prior year. The lower statutory profit is primarily attributable to reduced increase in property revaluations, which at $32 million was around $35 million less than FY17. With our operating performance being in line with expectation, we paid our FY18 distribution guidance of 12.8 cents per security, which I mentioned was around 7% growth on FY17. The approximate 98% payout ratio is consistent with recent years, which reflects the strong underlying cash flow generated by the business and the predominant triple net nature of our leases. Turning to page 8, you'll see a waterfall chart which illustrates the effect on EPS from operations in FY18. No surprises that the significant contributors are income growth from rent reviews and new investment, offset by the effect of primarily funding investment in FY18 through new equity, which has enabled us to maintain a resilient capital structure but also build future investment capacity. If we turn to page 9, slide presents a summary of some line items for Arena's balance sheet. The full balance sheet is in the appendix to the presentation. Key points to note, growth in total assets is primarily due to $80 million invested into ELC developments and acquisitions, asset revaluations of $32 million. And there was also a 23% increase in net assets that was driven by both the valuations and also the $69 million in new equity raised during the period. Gearing at just under 25% remains below Arena's maximum gearing range of circa 35 to 40%. We remain comfortable that the current gearing gives Arena scope to take advantage of new growth opportunities and provides a buffer around market volatility. I note that gearing is expected to increase a couple of percentage points as our existing projects are funded from debt facilities. Turning to page 10, you'll find a summary of Arena's capital management position. Again, there is some information on the debt facilities included in the appendix. Our approach to capital management in FY18 has prioritised resilience and risk reduction in the face of greater scope for market volatility and risk. As a result, key activity in FY18 centred on completing a refinance mid-year that eliminated near-term debt expiry and reweighted debt facilities to a 4.4-year average term as at June 18. Noting that there is no expiry before March 2022, nearly 4 years away. The facility was also increased by $25 million in conjunction with the refi to accommodate new investment opportunity and maintain liquidity in excess of development commitments. We also extended the average duration of our interest rate hedge cover, which is out at 5.9 years, again with no near-term expiry. Hedge cover was consistent at around 78% of drawn debt. The summary effect of the capital management activity and the increase in BBSW pricing noted across the market was a minor increase in our all-in weighted average debt cost, which stands at 3.85%. It's important to note that whilst we completed a significant debt extension during FY18, accessing longer-dated debt markets will remain part of our longer-term funding strategy. At the moment, the relative pricing available in those markets is not yet attractive for us. We expect that to improve in time with scale and diversity of the business, and we are continuing to invest time in developing those debt capital market relationships that we think will be of benefit to Arena in the future. The capital management plan is also focused on supporting new investment and maintaining a relatively modest level of gearing. This was achieved, as some of you may recall, through a $55 million institutional placement back in July 2017 and a $10 million SPP for our retail investor base performed at the same time. Our capital raising initiatives received strong investor support, and we have also currently got our DRP open to provide incremental funding for the ongoing development pipeline and new opportunities. Finally, I note that Arena is, probably no surprises, operating very well within the requirements of our debt facilities, and we have substantial headroom in both our LVR and interest cover covenants. I will now hand you over to Rob DeVos, who will take you through Arena's property portfolio.
Thanks very much, Gareth, and good morning, everyone. I'm on page 12. Before moving into the detail of the portfolio performance, I was keen to quickly reiterate that the strategy for the portfolio is to invest in social infrastructure property where we can take advantage of the macro themes of population growth, growing community need, and governments increasingly outsourcing the provision of community infrastructure to the private sector. Our objective for the portfolio is ultimately to provide investors long-term predictable cash flows with the opportunity for growth. Against this objective, financial year 18 has again seen pleasing results achieved across the portfolio, not only in terms of total property return, which was 12% for the period, but also because of the success that we've had in increasing the portfolio's resilience in a period where we've seen some headwinds in the early learning sector. Highlights of the period under the team's key focus areas, lease management, we've maintained 100% occupancy. We've achieved like-for-like rental growth from the portfolio of 2.6%, including market reviews at 6.3%. We've worked in partnership with our tenants to extend leases out of cycle that has extended our WALE to 12.9 years. And we continue to work with our tenant partners to identify and secure what we think are the best new childcare development opportunities in the country. Portfolio management, we acquired a newly constructed childcare property in Metro Brisbane on a sale and leaseback basis and introduced our preferred lease and divested an older operating centre in regional Queensland. We additionally divested a development site in Victoria that allowed us to obtain our development profit without taking on the development risk. And we've seen further valuation growth across the portfolio, albeit at a lower growth rate than recent periods. The passing yield for the portfolio is now at 6.5%. We've again had success in executing on our development activities with 10 sites acquired and a record 14 high-quality projects completed at a total cost of $88 million and an average yield on cost, and that's all costs, of 6.7%. And post-balance date, we've completed a further two development projects. The takeaway points from this slide are the portfolio metrics are in good shape. 100% occupancy, WALE at 12.9 years, portfolio value up 5.3%, and weighted average passing yield now at 6.5%. Moving on to our lease expiry profile, the next page, and consistent with our strategy of providing those long-term predictable cash flows, the portfolio WALE has increased from 8 years at the time of listing 5 years ago to nearly 13 years at 30 June. This is a great outcome, which has been aided by strong and engaged management, strong tenant relations, and the high quality of the underlying portfolio, which has attracted tenants to take up renewal options and extend their leases. You can see on the graph that we've only 2% of the portfolio income expiring in the next 4 years, and no single year that has more than 17% of income expiring over the next 24 years. Our current leasing programs are focused on the healthcare expiries in financial year 20 and 23, and also the financial year 24 early learning centre expiries, which, due to the 5-year option notice period in our childcare leases, allows us to work with tenants now. Moving on to the rent review profile, the next slide. In the chart on this slide, and I'm on page 14, illustrates the comparative advantage the rent review structures are providing investors in the current low inflation environment. For financial year 18, we achieved like-for-like rental growth of 2.6%. Looking at the graph and working down from the top of the left-hand side column, you can see the small black section, which represents the market rent reviews that were completed at an average of 6.3%, which is consistent with prior year market rent review outcomes. Each of these had a collar of nil, an increase, and a cap of 7.5% increase. But below that in the grey section, we had 12% of the portfolio's income subject to a CPI-only increase. The large blue section, which I've focused on in previous presentations, represents 86% of the portfolio's rental income, which was subject to either a fixed increase or a minimum 2.5% increase. Importantly, the ratchet or floor protected against those low CPI outcomes that many commercial and childcare leases are currently exposed to. Looking forward to the next 3 years, you'll note that the increased exposure to market rent reviews, particularly in financial year 19, where we have 49 market rent reviews due, representing 17% of portfolio income. Each of these market reviews has a minimum increase of zero, 29 have a cap of 7.5%, and 20 are uncapped. It should be noted that about 50% of the market rent reviews are due in the final quarter of financial year 19, and therefore any rent increase from these properties will more meaningfully contribute to financial year 20 earnings. Moving on to valuations. In total, the portfolio as of June was up $31.6 million, an increase of 5.3% for the year, bringing the portfolio to just under $700 million in total. Approximately a third of the portfolio was independently revalued during the year, which is in line with our program of a rolling three-yearly independent valuation cycle, with intervening periods being measured by directors' valuations. The increase in value is a result of a compression in yields of 24 basis points, and an increase in rents, as well as development margins being accounted for on completed projects. As we've done in previous periods, we've included some headline yield analysis from our comprehensive database of childcare sales, which is included in the appendix. It's been a record year of direct market transaction activity, with 117 sales recorded at a transaction value of approximately $540 million. Consistent with most domestic real estate sectors, there is some evidence of the significant cap rate compression that we've seen over the last 6 years stabilising and even pushing out a little in some markets. Agents are having to work harder to finalise transactions and buyers are being more discerning and lenders more cautious. I think the biggest factor that we've seen in the last 6 months is private investors having a much better understanding of the underlying childcare businesses and the metrics and rental affordability, and not being blinded by big shiny buildings with high starting rents. This is having the effect of some low-end development stock, which is typically set on high rents in questionable markets, now showing high-yielding results when offered to market. When looking at valuations, I encourage investors to look carefully at rental affordability in this sector. As you're aware, Arena's childcare operators provide this data quarterly on a monthly basis, which allows us to watch this metric very carefully. Moving on to developments, page 16, and I'm really pleased with our teams and our consultants and construction partners' efforts on our development programs this year. It's been a record year of activity with 14 high-quality early learning centre developments completed, which has provided over 1,700 new long-day licence places into communities that had an undersupply of high-quality childcare services. As mentioned, we've also completed a further two developments post-balance date. We continue to benefit from strong earnings and value accretion from our development programs. Our development margins averaged 12% for the year, which is commensurate reward for the level of risk assumed, and the average yield on all costs for our completed developments was 6.7%. This contributed approximately $5.9 million to annual net property income. Our new centres are geographically spread over five states and territories and have the common investment rationale of being located in undersupplied catchment areas that have poor, older-style competition, where the introduction of high-quality operations with ease and good parking and good exposure that can be delivered at a cost that allows tenants to be highly competitive with their daily fees. Early occupancy results have been strong in the developments we've completed in the period. Half of these projects are already operating at a profit to the operator. Typically, stabilised occupancy and profitability takes 18 months to achieve. It's been gratifying to hear some recent comments from the families that are using our new developments that have been highly complimentary, particularly in relation to the outdoor areas. We've put a lot of work into playscapes that are designed to assist in early learning programs, stretching children's imagination, and perhaps most importantly from the children's perspective is simply having fun. It's one of the best parts of my team's jobs is seeing the smiles generated from the properties we proudly develop and manage. Moving forward to future development programs on page 17. In total, our development pipeline now sits at five projects with an anticipated aggregate cost of $31 million. As mentioned, we've reached practical completion on two of these projects post-balance date. Our current development projects are all being undertaken on a fund-through basis, where either a third-party developer or tenant undertakes the development and we pay capped progressive payments for which we earn a return either by capitalised coupon or site rent. These projects have a lower level of inherent development risk and as such provide for a lower anticipated yield. We anticipate this will be in the order of 6.5% looking forward. In total, the development portfolio is a mix of predominantly metropolitan sites with a common theme of a strong tenant, undersupplied market, and a comparative advantage in a local context, for example, close to a primary school or located on a major commuting thoroughfare. The pipeline provides for approximately 520 long-day places in high-demand catchments, and importantly, each site has settled, has our preferred development approval, and a committed tenant in place on our preferred lease structure. Of the $31 million total anticipated cost, approximately $14 million was outstanding to complete the projects as at balance date. In addition to these projects, we have a number of projects in various stages of negotiation, but it's fair to say that consistent with our advice at the half-year presentation, we have reduced our development pipeline and taken a lower risk approach so as to position Arena well to take advantage of future opportunities that we think will have a better risk-reward profile. Moving on to market conditions on page 18. In this time last year, we anticipated that net new supply in calendar year 17 would be in the order of 4%, which looks like to be a correct call. Growth in supply has continued into 2018, as expected, with 224 net new centres added in the calendar year to the 1st of August 2018. There are also a further 300 centres currently in construction that will finish over the next 24 months. You can see in the left-hand side graph, there's been a steady rise in growth of childcare centres from 2012. We anticipate that the next 24 months is likely to be a high point in that cycle. The last column in the light blue shade is the first 7 months of calendar year 18. We're starting to see market forces working. There is a noticeable slowing of the supply pendulum. There's been a reduction in demand for new centres as tenants continue to focus on protecting and improving existing operating margins, as can be seen across our portfolio. We're also seeing private investors being more discerning on new acquisitions, and as such, there is a slowdown of speculative development. We see opportunities for Arena growing in this market, where capital can be deployed to upgrade existing stock for additional rental return, or where we can secure selective projects where developers are not able to raise the capital required to fund the development. On the right-hand side graph, you can see the dispersion of the net new supply this calendar year on a state-by-state basis. It is evident that South Australia and Victoria had higher than the national average growth. With competition increasing, it is the operators with engaged staff and more efficient cost structures, including affordable rents, that are less likely to be vulnerable to occupancy and profitability pressures. Moving on to demand, as mentioned, demand has increased and continues to increase, and we anticipate it will continue in the medium term by continued population growth in the 0 to 4-year-old bracket, albeit that slowing slightly. We've got a higher workforce participation and better recognition of the socialisation benefits that early learning provides to young children. And importantly, the federal government's $37 billion Jobs for Family package has now been introduced. Early discussions with our tenant partners indicates that despite some early confusion and technical issues, there is growing confidence of an earlier positive demand impact than may have first been considered. So what does all that mean for the Arena childcare portfolio? Moving on to page 20. As mentioned, Arena's portfolio remains in a strong position. We're 100% occupied. Our tenants were able to lift their average daily fees by over 5% through the year to reflect just under $97.50 as at 30 June, which remains significantly below the government's benchmark of approximately $130 per day. As you can see on the graph below, the new government funding package suits our portfolio of early learning centre tenants who are typically geared towards middle-income families. To give this context, all but one of our centres, so that is 201 of 202 operating centres, which includes all of the 33 developments that we've completed in the last 4 years, have average daily fees under the government's benchmark fee. We did see some downward pressure on occupancy of approximately 2 percentage points across the portfolio for the period, and rent to gross revenue ratio increased marginally from 10.9 to 11.2%. But importantly, over the same period, like-for-like operator revenues increased by 2% and average centre EBITDA increased by 5%. I'll now move on to the outlook for Arena REIT. And to reiterate that we have today announced distribution guidance of 13.5 cents for financial year 19, an increase of 5.5%. As Gareth advised, we've seen continued strong financial performance throughout financial year 18 and are in a solid financial position. Our cash-based net operating profit was up 21%, earnings per security was up 6.5%, and gearing has reduced to under 25%. The underlying portfolio metrics are strong. WALE at nearly 13 years, 100% occupied, and tenants on aggregate are more profitable. Looking forward, we have a positive outlook that is supported by long-term triple net leases that have ratcheted escalations and a high level of market reviews in financial year 19, as well as the annualisation of the financial year 18 development completions. We have a highly engaged and passionate management team with in-house development expertise, where we currently have several exciting development projects on foot, and considerable debt capacity to execute on selective new development activities, including projects that are currently in negotiation. We are likely to see further short-term pressure on childcare operators until the benefits of the new government subsidy starts flowing through to changes in consumer behaviour and stimulate further increases in demand. From a macro level, we have a growing need for social infrastructure services across the country. So in closing, I'm pleased to advise that we are well placed to continue delivering benefits to the communities that use our assets and on our investment objective of providing long-term predictable distributions to investors with good prospect for growth. That concludes the formal presentation, so I'll now pass the call to our operator, Claire, to open up for questions. Thank you, Claire.
Sure, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the pound or hash key. Our first question comes from the line of Darren Leung from Macquarie. Please ask your question.
Good morning, guys. Just a few from me. First one is, has there been an update in terms of how conditions are going for the tenants in terms of occupancy, just given the recent change to the government subsidy?
Hi, Darren. Look, we've had a number of discussions with the tenants over the last couple of weeks in regards to what occupancy is looking like. We haven't got anything conclusive. We'll have a better idea as we start seeing reporting data next quarter. But we have been pleasingly had positive discussions with our tenants to date on this. So I think we should expect demand impacts to be positive and perhaps a little earlier than what we had anticipated.
And approximately how much are you thinking in terms of the uplift, whether it's from an occupancy or rate perspective?
I wouldn't hazard a guess at this early stage. I think families are still working through changes, what it actually means for them, and I think it'd be too early to hazard a guess there.
Okay. In the announcement, I noticed there was a comment which said operating conditions of the tenants has improved despite a slight reduction in centre occupancy. Is this a comment around profitability on the EBITDA level? And then I suppose the extension of this question is, what's happening at the cost line?
Yes.
Is it really wages or?
Yeah, sure. So, so that the comment, just for those who haven't seen it, was that we've seen a small deterioration in centre level occupancy, but our tenants have become more profitable. So gross revenues are up by 5%. Gross revenues are up by 2%. In that context, you saw that the average fees were lifted by 5%. EBITDA also up by 5%. Bearing underneath that, you saw that the rent-to-revenue ratio is about 11.2. Profitability margins remaining still around that 17% sort of mark, Darren. So it is in other costs, not labour. Labour's actually been quite stable. And we've spoken about labour quite a bit over the last couple of years. It's one area that we do test quite a bit. Rent at 11.2%. For those who are not familiar with it, labour makes up something between 50 and 65 cents in the dollar of gross revenue, so it's the one that we carefully watch. There hasn't, again, the sort of market and our tenants have sort of shown a stable position on labour costs. So it's been in other costs, and those other costs are many and varied, but there's definitely a cohesive try from the marketplace to become more efficient in how they're delivering their services.
Do you have an example of what those other costs are, perhaps one or two examples?
In some instances, and this is a poor example, in some instances they can be other property costs, for instance. So it might be maybe a lack of reinvestment into properties. So I think that on our portfolio, pleasingly, we've seen a large reinvestment by particularly our larger tenants. Other costs could be in relation to marketing, which is unusual in this market as well, because we're seeing a lot more chop and change from consumers. But it could also be just just other costs, including just how they're dealing with their consumers, so IT and other things that sort of fit in that other category.
Right, thank you. And then there was a good result in terms of the market reviews, up 6.3% in FY18. You obviously mentioned the structure heading into 19. What are you forecasting in terms of the benefit for these? And I appreciate the bulk of this probably won't happen until the benefit won't really occur to FY20.
That's right. So let's just that's right. The vast majority, there's 50% that'll be sitting in that final couple of months of financial year 19. So you won't see anything meaningful from those for financial year 19. But the annualisation is important. We've seen over the last couple of years results sitting around that 6%. So if you look at historically, we've sort of had market rent review outcomes not dissimilar to what we've seen in financial year 18. That would be about where our expectation sort of sits as a hazarding a guess right now, Darren. So I think the interesting part in that is we've got about half of those market rent reviews uncapped. So it'd be the first time that we're sort of operating outside capped areas. I don't think it changes our view in regards to outcomes at this stage, just probably a little early to sort of attack those.
Sure. And just the final one from me. Obviously, the development volumes are coming down commensurate with market conditions. How do you think about where the business sits over the next sort of 3 years? Like, is there an opportunity for, you know, returns in childcare development to be higher? Or alternatively, are you, you know, is there much progression in terms of pursuing other social infrastructure opportunities?
Yeah, there's a couple of questions in that. So you're definitely the yields have come down. You see that forward looking, we're looking at 6.5. We're at 6.7 for our yield on cost for 18. One of the factors in there is that we're reducing risk as well. So we've taken a sort of risk off approach, a lot more fund throughs than sort of taking on DA risks and other things. So whilst we have got the development expertise in house and pretty nimble at being able to execute, we think that just the timing right now is better to have a smaller pipeline and one that's got less risk in it. Looking forward, I think there is opportunities. There's a lot of capital that's still needed in the childcare market. We're starting to see, particularly where we've got tenants that are wanting, got big portfolios that are wanting to do things in it, that might have, you know, we may have a lower cost of capital. So investing into our portfolio, for instance, and you know, taking the rental returns open to us, there's assets in the marketplace that are would maybe attractive on that basis of buying at a price and then fixing them up, if you like, with the appropriate tenant partners. In regards to the diversification question, we're always looking. You know, there's always opportunities out there, and we think that's probably growing. We think that we've done exceptionally well in the childcare sector. We'll continue to work in the childcare sector, but are looking at other opportunities in different social infrastructure sectors.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Yep. Thanks, Darren. Thanks, Darren.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of David Pritchard from Morgan Stanley. Please ask your question.
Morning, team. How are you going? I guess just following on from the questions before, if you were to be looking at acquisitions, what sort of total returns would you be looking for given the backdrop?
Thanks very much, David. Total returns for us. So I guess our investment objective is those long-term predictable cash flows. We got a penchant towards earnings accretive, so you can sort of see our WACC at the moment, high fives or mid to high fives. We don't need to buy in that range. Total return for us, being a long-term investor, sits at something like an IRR calc that might be, high single digits is probably where we're shooting for at the moment.
Great, thanks for that. And I suppose just following on from that, I don't know if you've seen the recent news this morning on Healthscope setting up a wholesale fund for some of its healthcare properties.
Yep.
I suppose, with your mandate for social infrastructure, is this something you'd be interested in, one, and then also how do those assets sort of compare to your currently existing portfolio of medical assets?
We haven't read the detail, but have seen that Healthscope proposing setting up their own property trust. I think the interesting piece in that is that there's 49%, not a controlling interest in that that's being offered to the market, as at least I've read it on a first blush. I don't think that would appeal to us. There's some pretty lumpy assets that are sitting in there, great tenant, no doubt, but not without operational challenges there, David, of course, more recently. So we're on the hunt for healthcare assets. These are a number that are coming. There is a number that's sort of coming to market that we've seen over the last little while that may shake loose. Everyone's sort of watching the Healthscope ones with interest to sort of see where pricing gets to. I think this, we will watch what happens in that. But, 49%, I think, what's that? Nearly $900 million worth of real estate would be a big acquisition for us and probably not one that we'd apply our capital to be candid.
Okay, and just with those assets, how do they sort of compare to your current ones that you have from a quality perspective?
I don't know
their
assets intimately enough. We sort of obviously keep a bit of an eye on what's happening with assets that may sort of shake loose, I guess, from a real estate perspective. I can talk depth at our assets are multidisciplinary medical centres designed for primary care, which is slightly different than some of the health scope. Assets. And ours are probably smaller in scale as well. So there's GP imaging and pathology typically in ours, where there's more significant piece of real estate and more significant operations typically in the Healthscope business model.
Great. Thanks for that, guys.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Rohan Smith from Goldman Sachs. Please ask your question.
Hi guys, can you hear me?
Bit crackly, Ryan.
Bit crackly.
We'll try our best.
Okay, sorry, I have had a few issues with the headset. Look, just sticking with healthcare, notice the rent on a like-for-like basis decelerated to 1.3%. You were previously doing about 2.5% growth. And we've also had some talk from primary yesterday of them being pretty aggressive on their rental views. Given that that is the bulk of the near term, when I say near term, you know, the next few years expiries, are you able to just talk us through, you know, kind of what, where you're seeing the pressure from in that portfolio and kind of are you in discussions with primary given their comments about wanting to reduce rental costs?
Well, the operator, can we just cut Rowan off because it's quite crackly and we'll try and respond to what we think the question was.
Sure, go ahead.
Sorry, thank you.
Thanks, Ron. So, yeah, a couple of things on healthcare. We didn't talk a lot about that in the presentation today. Partly that is there's not lots going on there. We've got a lease proposal that we need to, or lease negotiation that we need to have with primary. We've been waiting to see the colour of results that came out the last day. You know, I think they're interesting. The capital raise particularly is interesting. There is, as most people will be aware, a change in management. That management has very much focused back to grassroots primary care. That's good for us. They've also reiterated that they're after more GPs. That's more headcount, more people servicing them. They're talking about a 45% increase there. So that again, bodes well for accommodation providers like Arena REIT. In respect of our portfolio, I think you're seeing two things there. You'd be quite right, Ron, you picked up that there's lower income growth that's come out. So we did have lower growth at 1.3% from that portfolio. We also had lower valuation growth overall, and what you're seeing on that basis is that whale starting to shorten. So we are interested in having a discussion with primary. It is part of our the strategic focus over the next little while to shore up where we're going with that. I think I'd encourage investors to have a look at the real estate that actually sits behind it. So whilst it's very important to the tenant, it also has that positive reversionary aspects as well. So, you know, like the likes of Bondi and Leichhardt are now moving into alternate uses if that were required, that would show value as well. So I think we're in pretty good shape there. I hope that's answered your question there, Rowan, but healthcare for us, whilst we didn't talk a lot about it today, making up about 13% of the portfolio is important, and I think you'll hear more from us over the next few reporting periods.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Gareth James from Morningstar Equity. Please ask your question.
Oh, hi, guys. I think you kind of touched on this earlier, but I was just interested in your comments around, I think you said something along the lines of there was a growing confidence in an earlier impact or earlier positive benefits from the CCS than expected. And I was just keen to better understand that. So are you really talking about occupancy improvements rather than fee growth?
We saw fee growth over financial year 18 about 5%, and we, I guess, through the marketplace had been talking our view that the CCS would not be a light bulb switch. We had the view that it would be 12 to 18 months to see consumer behaviour change to take effect of the benefits that subsidy package is providing to particularly middle income families. Our tenant, we've sort of had a round of tenant discussions over the last number of weeks, and I think I made the point in the presentation that there has been some take on and technical issues, particularly systems and IT based, and some confusion amongst some families. Overall, our tenants have been more positive in regards to the demand impact. We haven't got that quantified yet, so I'm sort of a bit, don't want to sort of crystal ball it too much here, but we have been surprised at the level of positivity from our tenant partners in regards to CCS at this very early stage.
Sure. Okay. And are you seeing much of an increase in CapEx spend by tenants on the centres? It's just that I'd assume that, you know, if the environment's more competitive, that operators would be spending more on the centres.
Yes. Yeah. No. There's no question about that. We get to see all the works, pursuant to the lease, we get to see when people are doing works and how much it costs. There's no doubt that the level of expenditure has gone up, as it should. You know, these centres and the industry centres need capital expenditure. There's, you know, there's under five-year-olds running around and you know, beating up properties. Real tenants need to take into account the capital requirements of these properties, their triple net leases. And in the event that they don't, we often have discussions about the defensive nature of spending CapEx and the benefit of that in maintaining occupancy. So those discussions have got a lot easier over the last little while. So I think there's a real understanding that you know, to maintain occupancy, one must, you know, invest into new playgrounds and other things to remain relevant.
So does that mean that the EBIT growth is lower than the EBITDA growth that you quoted?
Yeah, so definitely DAs. There's definitely money being spent.
There's been an element of that.
Yep.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Gareth.
Thank you. We don't have any further question at this time. Please, Mr. Winter, you can continue.
Thank you, Claire. Given the time cuts, we will close the call now. Thank you for your interest and participation, and we look forward to catching up with many of you in the coming weeks. Thank you.
Thank you. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you all for participation. You may all disconnect.